Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the American shit. Let's go hook him up!
I just whipped your ass.
You take it all away.
I'm going to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio, or I should say the last edition of Over the Top Radio that you will be hearing this year before we start, as we re-embark on a new year starting next week. So I'd like to introduce my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward, and happy belated Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you, Craig. And I guess we're still waiting for her other co-host to call in. So until he gets in, well, I guess we'll just start with Craig, because I'm sure he had a lot to do on Christmas. How was your Christmas, Craig?
Of course. It was excellent. Started off, of course, Christmas Eve, and I've never been so happy to get a pair of socks for Christmas, but I got socks, and I got some cash, and... We do name drawings, you know, so our one side of my family gets together, we draw names to see who buys who what, you know what I mean, because we have kind of a big family, and so we do that on my wife's side, and we also do it on my side, and my nephew's soon-to-be wife bought me socks and cash. So apparently I didn't exceed the limit. So,
well, it balances out, you know. It's like half of it's an awesome present, half of it's a shitty present. So I mean, that's actually pretty cool.
Well, no. The socks were fine because they said Pearl Jam on them.
Oh Jesus Christ! On that note, let me introduce my other co-host on there, Contreras. What's going on, Contreras?
Not too much is going on.
Not too much. Just being disgusted by Craig's Christmas presents. Even his family is weird.
Yeah, Craig,
go ahead and continue, Craig, because I'm sure you got a lot more than just socks and cash.
I did very well this year. We don't tend to spend a lot during the year, so we kind of go nutty at Christmas time. And next day, Christmas Day, ran downstairs and had great joy in watching my son open gifts because, you know, it's more blessed to give than receive. And he opened up the Disney Infinity for his Xbox 360, and lots of rare and cool characters to go with that. And he got a wrestling ring that I posted a photo on both Twitter and Facebook of. He had a Money in the Bank style match, but you see, two of the wrestlers were attached by a chain, so. As I said on both Better Booker than Russo at 7. And got into my stuff. My wife graciously picked up a PS4 for me, so I'm pretty excited about that. and some games and some, I got the Money in the Bank DVD, the like the best of Gimmick, you know. And there's another one in there too. Oh, War Games DVD, which I hadn't gotten yet. And then my daughter bought me the coolest thing ever. It's a collectible Despicable Me 2 minion, which I have on my lap. He is animatronic. His eyes and his body move, and he says clever things. Here, I'll give him a whirl. Here. Yeah, so he's awesome.
Well, that's irritating.
So yeah, this is awesome. I'm of course a geek, so I will not take him out of the package, but he's pretty cool. So yeah.
No wonder it sounded so bad. It's still in the package.
Yeah, well, you might be onto something there.
Why is it that your wife gives you much more cooler gifts than you give her, Craig, every year?
How do you know that? How do you know that?
Because you tell us every year what you get, and it's so much cooler than what you get her.
Well, I'm a guy, and come on. Guy gifts are always cooler than girl gifts. I did very well this year, thank you. I got her a nice ring and some earrings and a nice set for the kitchen and a Bluetooth.
The big set is going to be more expensive.
Yeah.
You sound kind of funky, Couture.
Say what, ma'am?
Oh, it sounds better. It sounded real. You sounded like Grammy on the Brian and Vinny show last night. You were kind of out of tone there for a minute. Out of tone.
You're good.
But
yeah,
but,
what
did you get for Christmas? Oh, that's good. Well, what did you get, Couture?
I got me a Kindle Fire, which I have the switchboard loaded on right now. Makes it all
very cool.
Setting up the show a whole lot easier, God. I got me a 360 gig hard drive from my Xbox, so I can just like download games from like Xbox Live and also from, you know, like all the download content that they come out with every now and then, so I can like download new maps, play multiplayer and stuff like that. Got me a new iPhone, which I'm on right now. I got Call of Duty Ghosts, which I've been playing.
Me too.
And got me a new controller from Xbox. And that's about it. Some clothes I didn't need. So I love watching the kids when they open up clothes for Christmas. They could be so, could they be any less enthused? Yeah, this is nice. Let's go put it on the pile and get another. I think that's just parents trolling, what that is. I had to deal with it when I was a kid, too. You know, you're given the gift and you squeeze it and you rattle it around and said, okay, socks, underwear, sweater.
My son was incredibly enthusiastic about everything he received, so done good. So, yeah. And Ed, how was your Christmas? Did you just spend a lonely evening at home, or?
Actually, yeah, a lonely evening at home, eating pretty much my only gift, which was some tamales, which were awesome tamales, by the way. But it was even of less of a Christmas this year than normal. Like I told you said last week, we really don't make too much of a big thing.
Right.
Yeah, my mom lives with her boyfriend, and she has for like quite a while. So ever since then, it's kind of like, you know, she's the one that was the person who put up the tree or decorations or made it kind of Christmas. So, you know, she has to spend time with him and his family. So me and my brother, we just really don't make a big deal about it, honestly. I gave a few presents away to people, but it doesn't bother me that I don't get too much. On Christmas, and I debated whether bringing this up or not. I'm going to go ahead and bring it up. My Christmas actually started really shitty, and basically, you know, I went to UPS that night, and shitty night at UPS. It used to be the night before Christmas Eve used to be the easiest night of peak. We'd only do like 30,000, 40, like half of what we like normally would do. And of course, we did like about 115 that night. And I'll talk more about UPS later. But anyway, I finished UPS. I went and got my papers. I did my paper route. And to get home, I got to get on I-35 and go south. I-35 is like the most known highway here in San Antonio. So I have to go through downtown, or actually it's more the side on the side of downtown. And the highway is pretty much the whole time it's going through downtown, it's elevated, you know, basically on the bridges, basically.
Yeah.
And I went from I-10 to where I get off, I switch to 35 south, so I get off 35, and I can see all these car lights and flares coming up. And I pass this car, black car, and it's kind of, it's mangled pretty good. And pretty bad. And I guess it took them a while to clean everything up, because it was also a rig that was jackknifed. And traffic was just backed up like almost all the way down to where I have to exit, like fucking miles away. So you could tell it had been there for a while. Anyway, I got home, was taking a nap. I get a call from one of the managers at the paper route, and I've known her since like I started. We started out as carriers at the same time. She became a manager. Anyway, I know her basically, and then there's this other guy, Gus, Mexican guy, older than me, really really cool, super nice guy. He's probably like the only friend I've had over the 10 years that I've been getting the paper, because I really don't socialize with a lot of people there. Yeah, I don't really see a lot of people because we're in and out, basically, except for Sunday. But the manager called me, Cassie, and she's basically crying and upset. And at first, I thought she was telling me that my friend Gus must have passed away. That's where it was kind of leading to. And then it switched to she told me that his son was killed in a car wreck that morning. And she said that one of the other carriers saw it, and she kind of told me where it was, and I was just waking up, so I was, like, freaking out, you know, that I didn't put two and two together until, like, right after the car, that the car that I saw that was all mangled was my friend's son's car, and he was a really good kid. I mean, he really was. He was a small kid. He'd come help his dad do the Sunday paper for years, and they'd come watch pay-per-views every once in a while here. And I even took him to the Royal Rumble where Shawn beat The Undertaker. The Undertaker beat Shawn, I'm sorry. And he was a good kid, but, you know, like most kids, when they get to that high school, he was already out of high school, but when they get to that age, you know, they do stupid shit. I did hundreds of stupid shit things in my life, you know, I still do. But I'm guessing he just went out with a friend. Must have gotten drunk, and somehow in driving home, he got on the wrong side of the highway was speeding down the highway. There was someone on the right side took a video after they called 911, and you just see his car just he's flying. And basically, he hit a semi head-on and died instantly. The passenger, there's not been like a lot of word on the passenger, so I'm assuming the passenger's all right. I know the truck driver had some back pain and went to the hospital, but he's all right. I mean, it could have been like a whole lot worse. You know what I mean? It really could have been a whole lot worse. I don't want to say luckily though, because you know I knew that kid. He was a good kid. He was like top. Not the highest guy with the grades, but he was up there. And him and his sister used to dance, and they used to do like dance competitions and stuff. I mean, he was a real good kid, and I always used to joke with him because like I'd always tell him, I'm like, Eric, is your dad paying you? And he's like, oh no. And the dad would be like, oh no, I paid by giving him life. And I'd always tell him, yeah, you need to stand up. This is the day you got to become a man and say, no, Dad, I'm not going to help you. I'm going to go make some money and help Ed. did his papers and stuff, and you know, it's just it really put a kind of a downer on Christmas, you know.
Awesome.
So I just gonna tell everyone, you know, just don't take for granted. You know, your life can change in an instant, and you know, just give your kids a hug every morning, because you know, sadly, not everything's perfect in this world. We do have a caller on the line, so I'm going to put him on real quick. I'm actually kind of excited because I think he's it's Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio, what's going on?
Oh, how dare you! I was hoping that I was catching you in the middle of saying something stupid about the year that was 2013, but you were telling your story about your friend, and I'm very sorry to hear about that. So unfortunately, you did not set me up properly. But I'm here now, and this is Alex Goff, by the way, and I'm here, so I guess we have to carry on. And hopefully I was adding something of content. Hey, what's going on, guys? I was hoping that add something of content about to the show, unlike what Ed does or will do.
Well, since you're on the phone, I mean, obviously you have something to contribute to our little show this evening, Alex. The floor is yours, my friend.
Okay, so, Craig, this is something that because you worked in professional wrestling, so the monetization of professional wrestling moving forward, this is something that I think companies have you know, Ring of Honor was revolutionary because they introduced a brand new business model, which was losing money on the shows on the front end, making up on the back end with the DVDs, and we saw that business model quickly dissipate. And now it's like the World Wrestling Entertainment on down, right, is looking for new ways to monetize professional wrestling. And what's interesting to me is that this is not uncommon in other forms of entertainment, right? Yesterday I was listening to Howard Stern on SiriusXM is replaying a lot of old interviews, and he interviewed Louis C.K., and Louis C.K. was talking about how he went out and did his own tour without Ticketmaster, was able to charge less for his tickets, but was able to reap a little bit more of the profit. And we've seen musicians do this, comedians, people figuring out new ways to monetize their product because the old methods just are not working anymore. And so 2013 may not have been the year that started this, but moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see how companies do it because the old ways aren't really working.
Let me add this, and no respect to Ring of Honor or any of the indie companies that are out there, but Iron Maiden just did something very revolutionary. They took basically a poll of the BitTorrent sites. So a BitTorrent, of course, is illegal downloads of music and a lot of times bootlegs of different concerts and whatnot. So Iron Maiden took this poll of these BitTorrents, and, of course, their band was actually on a lot of them. So they figured out exactly where the people lived that were downloading their music illegally. So then they scheduled a tour to hit the cities and countries that downloaded their music illegally the most and had one of the most successful tours of last year by doing that. That just tells me if you're putting out something of quality, people are going to come to it and people are going to pay for it.
That's exactly why the WWE makes so much is pretty successful in the European tours, because, you know, excluding myself and people like me, I'm sure more people from the UK are downloading and streaming WWE products, maybe just because of the time difference, because maybe they don't have the channel, whatever. But I really, because you see how many European members are on the website. You know, they are,
yes,
it's basically 50-50, you know.
Fast.
So when the WWE does go to Europe, you know, these people they're ready for it and they're excited for it, maybe more so than here in the States at times. And I think that's why the WWE, and plus they don't go like every month, you know what I mean? They go like semi-regularly, and, you know, to me, that's kind of like it's kind of what they're doing is like with Iron Maiden, even though I did see an article where that's kind of the story is being debunked, but who knows?
Great.
What's interesting, TNA's being, you know, TNA's really big internationally. opposed to like here in the States. That's why they're doing so much stuff over in the United Kingdom and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're going to make money for like a week or two.
And I wanted, I just wanted to say real quick, and the UFC's counter model is to where they're doing expansive touring, right? What's up, Contreras? I didn't realize you were on either. I never think that you're on these shows as well. But yeah, so UFC is doing this expansive.
I don't know how to take that.
Touring.
he's like he's the church of the opposite. He doesn't like redneck, you know.
Well, I call in to troll Ed, and then I get the treat of talking to Craig as well, and then the next treat for Trevor being on as well. So it's a three-pronged thing. But anyway, so UFC is doing this expansive model where they're touring all over the world, and people can say, well, you know, they're degrading their product by having so many shows. But then you look at some of these gates they're doing in Europe. And the Philippines, for example, I assume they'll do a pretty good gate as well. So it almost kind of counteracts whatever money they've been losing in the U.S. And I really don't think they're hurting the U.S. market all that much, because if people aren't going to see these shows anyway, I don't think they're hurting the market too much. I think more UFC's problem is the fact that no one is really interested in watching Fox Sports 1 unless there's live fights. But it's kind of interesting because the expansion model isn't something like an independent company may be able to do, right? Ring of Honor can't run five shows in five different locations in one night. So it's just going to be interesting moving forward, seeing what the independent companies, because Pro Wrestling Tees, I think, is one of the greatest inventions of the last 5 years, because it allows professional wrestlers to monetize on their own, independent of a professional wrestling company. I went to PWG shows for years, and Chris Hero would come with this expansive suitcase filled with all different types of shirts, trading cards, whatever you like. And now, independent of being booked at a professional wrestling show, professional wrestlers like Colt Cabana and the Young Bucks can sell their merchandise to the fans via this website. I'm excited to see, I guess, some of the younger minds, what they do with the expanded technology and how they're able to market themselves and get their products out to a fan base. Because Colt Cabana, honestly, I haven't really seen much of Colt Cabana in the past 2 years. He hasn't really wrestled companies I keep up with, but he still has quite the following due to his podcast. And and so, I mean, I'm excited. And you see other wrestlers kind of taking his lead, right? Steve Austin, Chris Jericho. And it's just interesting moving forward. So.
Yeah, it's a good point. I just saw a live WWE Raw here a few weeks ago, and it's not so much the wrestling, because even Matt Hardy earlier today tweeted out that the wrestling in Ring of Honor is probably better than, you know, a lot of things going right now. But when you go to a WWE show, you're actually having an experience. You know, there's lights, there's the Tron, there's you know, loud music, and it's a party type atmosphere. And in the last few years, Ring of Honor's really lost that. I mean, there was some raucous crowds that we got to sit in there for a while, and it doesn't come across on TV, and I don't know why that is.
Well, all the shows we've been to have been pretty exciting, but then again, they're like what were they in New York? You know, the famous building in New York. They were at the Hammerstein. They were they were at the Amatory or whatever it is in Florida. They were at Center Stage in Atlanta. You know what I mean? So you had it was kind of like, you know, we got to see it, and it was exciting to us. But then, you know, when you go to a TV taping, it's not the same thing. It's not the you know, Center Stage. It's not the Hammerstein. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't come off as good. So they have their moments, but it's very few and far between, unfortunately. And for the rest of it, it's kind of, you know, I hate to say it because I love ROH, but it's kind of rinky-dink.
It does, especially when you go from sitting in a little arena, and then you go to WrestleMania the next day or the day after that, and it's like, wow, this we just moved up to the big leagues, you know?
Not that the minor leagues weren't fun and exciting, because, I mean, those are usually, like, overall. I mean, overall, wrestling-wise, the ROH shows are always the better ones. But, you know, like you said, WrestleMania, it's not a wrestling show. It's a rock concert. It's a theatrical show. It's like
an experience.
It's like a rock concert, Vegas show. You know, just there's so many things into one. I mean, there's Raw or pay-per-view or SmackDown, and then there's a house show. It's two different things. One's about entrances. One's about interviews. The other one's about wrestling, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah, they just need to, those indie companies need to find a way to capture that spark and that imagination, not by just putting on good matches, but somehow incorporating fun and entertainment in their shows. You know, I mean, Extreme Rising did very well this year, only doing just a handful of shows. And you know, if you've seen any of the stuff online or through a handheld cam, it looks legit. And I think that has a lot to do with the lighting and the loud music and getting the crowd pumped up.
Yeah. And like the other week, I tried to watch the Shine pay-per-view, which was ended up kind of being a disaster. But when I finally went back and finally got to watch it, like 3 or 4 days later, when they finally put it up, it was a good show. Like I think Shine and Shimmer actually have a little. It's kind of funny because don't take me for being overstated, but they seem to have some momentum. They seem to be having decent crowds at their shows. You know, or at least, you know, in crowds that are into it, and they seem to be doing all right, this IPFU notwithstanding. But, you know, it's still a niche audience. It's never going to get too big, but at least for, like, right now, the girls actually seem to be a little more relevant than they've ever been. It's, you know, so, I mean, that's cool, but, you know, it's still way down here. It's like, you know, there's I just can't. I would like to ask Dave, because, you know, Christmas Day is probably was the anniversary of the most famous angle as far as turning the company around when Terry Gordy slammed the cage door on Kerry Von Erich. And I would like to, like, find out what Dave Meltzer thinks, if that's ever possible to do an angle, let's say Ring of Honor does an angle, Dragon Gate does an angle, something to that where their entire business just turns around and becomes not even on fire, but white fire. You know what I mean? Is that even possible at this day and age for one single event to change everything? You know what I mean? Can the stars align again like that? Can the stars align like the night Steve Austin said Austin 316 for the first time? You know what I mean?
Sure.
And can something like that happen in this day and age?
I don't know with the guys today. I mean, guys back then, like you're talking about, I think it depends on who the guys are that are doing it, you know, and the connection the crowd has to them. So, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was going to ask you a question, actually. I was going to ask you, do you think it's a case of the fans being a little too smart and nobody buys into, you know, hating a heel or, you know, you think everybody's just so plugged in that they can't believe, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, nowadays, I like to think of myself as a smart fan, so it's hard for me to get into stuff because of what I'm, you know, we know how the tricks are done now. We know what everything is. We know the secrets and everything. Please don't ask, no, don't call in and yell at me because I don't know anything, because I think I do. Anyway. So, but I mean, sometimes it's hard for me to put myself in the place of a fan that doesn't know anything. Does that make sense? To get into it like a fan would, you know. So.
Hey, Couture, can I get you to call right back in? Because there are times when your line sounds really bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Just call back in and put yourself on real quick.
About your angle about the Christmas angle where Kerry Von Erich got the door slammed in his head, I think that it would be kind of hard to do today, right? Because while we do, we consider ourselves smart fans, I think the company where I think fans of our elk kind of lose ourselves is in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, right? I mean, we kind of take the characterizations that the UFC presents us and we kind of take them as reality or we kind of take them as reality, right? We kind of believe whatever perceptions we have of these fighters as they're presented in the countdowns. And in a new way, I think that's kind of modern form of kayfabe, right? Because they're able to package these fighters, present them to you. For the most part, the fans take it. And it's not – when I look at, like, boxing and UFC companies doing big, big pay-per-view buys, because it's kind of hard to judge WWE because – once a year they do a really good pay-per-view, and that's WrestleMania, and then the rest of the year their pay-per-views kind of go up and down, you know, depending on how interesting the television is before it, right? But you don't really see real big variations. But UFC or boxing, when they're able to get the big buys, is when they...
Let me interject real quick. What your statement about boxing is very, very, very much accurate. But as far as UFC this year... Those pay-per-views have gone down from an average of 800 to 600, and now they're doing 400 to 300 on a lot of shows. Tomorrow, I'm sure they'll do fantastic. But
yes.
Their business model is not the perfect model because right now they're like I say, their viewership is way down. The WWE blows their viewership away. I mean, I know they make more money than WWE because of the TV contracts, but as far as TV, it's WWE. And yes, the UFC is still above on pay-per-view overall. That model is going down because there's a goddamn show every week. And now people are going to pick more, are going to pick and choose more and more. And their monthly pay-per-views, in my opinion, are going to slowly go down into the ones, the low twos, except for when you have a show like tomorrow, which will be like when, you know, it'll be kind of like from Mayweather fights. You know, but as a whole, UFC is, I don't want to say they're in trouble or they're in danger, but they're not high up on that mountain where they were, you know.
Well, my point was that, I mean, my point was when UFC and boxing does a big pay-per-view, though, it's because they're able to independently combine two stars together and create an atmosphere, and they're really good at promotion to where everybody that would be interested hears about the fight, right? I think that a lot of times professional wrestling fans may not be aware of when the next pay-per-view is until it kind of comes up on them, right? I think that if we weren't listening to a weekly podcast, we wouldn't be aware of when a lot of these shows happen. But, for example, Floyd Mayweather against Canelo Alvarez, you're very aware of the date, the location, and when the show's happening. And I think that's kind of the thing is that WWE – I don't think it necessarily would take a big angle to gain interest in, like, a WWE, right? But just knowing when a fight would happen between two stars, for example, what they did for John Cena and The Rock, right? You have two stars that are going to fight, and I think that if you tell people the time and the location where they're going to fight, I think you can gain a lot of interest. Unfortunately for Ring of Honor, I recently started getting their television, and the best thing I can say about their television is the stories are always good. It's a good hour of television, but I don't feel invested in the shows, I guess, like where I don't feel like I like or dislike anyone. It's just a good hour of television. So it's kind of hard, I guess, for me to get where I'd have to see someone get beat up because I'm not that invested into it, right, as compared to my UFC, right, where I'd want to see the character of someone get beat up.
And that goes a lot, I think, to they just haven't created the stars that the other promotions have. You know, they have some fantastic wrestlers, but, you know, I don't see ACH as a guy that's going to be at a John Cena level. You know, even in 10 years.
And as good as Adam Cole is, he's still too small. And until he gets a little bigger, you know, most fans aren't going to take it. I mean, he's doing awesome. He's playing his part perfect, but he's still Adam Cole right now. You know what I mean?
He's got something.
He has something, but he's too small right now, and that really makes a big difference. I mean, he has to... Like, somehow Brian and Davey Richards, they found a way to get to get over how small they are. Adam Cole hasn't done that yet, and until he does, you know, he can be perfect at everything he does. His matches can be great, but no one's going to treat him like he's Bryan Danielson or Davey Richards.
And publicly, a lot of these guys act like they're doing an internship, right? A lot of these guys, I can't remember any time in history where guys were so just absent of, I can't think of the word, but just very clear with their intentions. My intentions are to go to World Wrestling Entertainment. I'm biding my time at company XYZ until I get there. I mean, historically, with the second and third promotions, the promotion, you know, the guys would say, you know, I'm here at XYZ, and XYZ is where it's at, and maybe 6 months from now you'd see them in WWE. But it was, they never insulted your intelligence in that way. And I appreciate guys' honesty. Whenever I've had the opportunity to interview someone from Ring of Honor, I generally ask them what their career aspirations are, and they'll tell me, well, of course I'd love to go to WWE. Then again, you know, it's like, but you're kind of doing a disservice to company XYZ, because right now you work for XYZ, right? And again, like I used the word internship, that's the attitude I feel of a lot of wrestlers today, is that they're doing internships until the big company is interested in them. And then what are you really watching if you're watching a bunch of guys where WWE is not interested in them at the time?
You know, and I get that same feeling when I watch, you know, Impact. You know, I see a bunch of very talented wrestlers that I don't see on the same level. I think you could take a Bobby Roode or a James Storm and put them in the mix at WWE, not upper echelon, but at least a good mid-card. And I see those guys, and I can't take them as seriously because they're not there. I don't know if it's a thing where, you know, the company needs to, you know, set a mandate where, you know, please do not, you know, say my aspiration and my dreams are going to WWE and interviews and things like that. You know, they should be putting over the company they work for, you know, whether it's a quote-unquote shoot or they're on their TV. And I think the best way is just to not acknowledge that there is another company. You know, WWE doesn't acknowledge there's a TNA or Ring of Honor or anything else. And if it does, it's very sparingly, and it's in a quote-unquote shoot-type setting. So, you know, maybe that's the key, you know, a guy to come out and say, I'm at Ring of Honor, and I wrestle for the best wrestling company in the world, and maybe that's one of the keys.
One of the things
acknowledges it with their main storylines. That's how they acknowledge WWE, because they're doing the same stuff.
Very true.
I was going to say the disadvantage in this day and age is back in the day when you had the territories, you know, you had your territories in bumfuck Egypt or way down, you know, here or there, but they were still part of the NWA. They were still, you know...
Well,
they were still part of the big time, even though they were in, you know, let's say Southwest was one of the first ones to die. It's kind of like way down here, just San Antonio. But it was still, I think it was actually part of the AWA. But they were still part of that group, so you'd still have a champion come, make someone look good. You know, they weren't equal, but they were portrayed as equal to the other wrestlers. And you don't have that today. Today you have WWE, and then everything is way, way below. You know what I mean? So it's a big disadvantage.
And also, people weren't doing interviews back then the way they are now, where they're talking about where they want to go while they're still with the company. You know? I mean, there was no internet. You never heard about it in, like, Pro Wrestling Illustrated or anything. So.
Right. And if you did open your mouth, you know, there were repercussions, you know. Even talking to the enemy or talking about the enemy was very much frowned upon.
Yeah, they'll make you work 6 months with Jimmy Vagan or something.
And also, I want to say, I think a lot of guys' aspirations in the 80s were to go to World Wrestling Federation. I mean, we watch a lot of World Wrestling Federation DVDs, and every time they talk about, you know, every time they interview these guys, they're like, oh, well, my goal was to get to New York. My goal was to get to New York. Maybe Dave Meltzer would be a better resource about this, but I don't believe that everyone's goal in 1987 was to get to New York, right? I think it was to get to somewhere where you could be consistent. I think that was the thing, and where you could be over, right? But not necessarily work for World Wrestling Federation, because that might not have matched your style, right? But today...
The key point on that is they didn't have to go to WWE because they could still make money. If you had Jerry Lawler, even though Memphis, a lot of the guys didn't make money, Jerry Lawler made money. The Andersons made money in Georgia. The Von Erichs made money in Texas. So you didn't have to go to WWE to make money. Today, you do. It's the only way to make money. I mean, maybe there are, you know, Colt, so he's a freaking carny. He can sell stuff. He can make some money. Hero's going to make money now that he's out and everyone's like mad that he was let go. So there's a few guys who will be able to make money. But as a company, as a whole, as most of them, they're not making shit. And the only way for them to make money is to get to WWE.
Yeah, there's a time and a point in an indie wrestler's life when he's tired of signing autographs and he's tired of contacting shirt companies and getting Polaroids taken in the ring. There's a time where you don't want to do that anymore. And unfortunately, that's what those guys have to do to make ends meet.
And WWE doesn't even seem like they don't. I mean, like going to TNA seems like it's a detriment in trying to get a WWE deal nowadays, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Surely. Truly. No. I can't even imagine that the WWE has even talked one-on-one with AJ Styles. I can't even fathom it.
I can't understand why not.
Right. But the viewership on TNA, if AJ showed up, you would have three-quarters of the arena going, who's that now? What's going on?
Yeah, you need to hit the store kind of from the bottom on up, like they do with pretty much everybody. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like they were in territories. When guys came into the big companies, you knew who they were from
right.
the magazines. You know, they had they were the stars you heard about, like from the smaller territories, and the magazines talked them up big and stuff like that, and they were actually names before they got there. So,
like Chris Jericho was treated like an absolute joke for a year, and then he comes out of Raw and he's a superstar. You know, you don't have that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like the Wildcat Chris Harris showed up and everybody went crazy for him.
That poor bastard.
But Alex, before we let you go, Alex, do you have anything else you want to talk about real quick?
I guess that was kind of it. I took you guys down a windy road of.
I know.
But I think it was a good discussion. But I'm sorry, I took you guys off the topic, which is the year-end review. So thanks, guys, for having me. And if you enjoyed my musings, I do.
Thank you for being here.
I do a weekly podcast over online worldofwrestling.com, and have a good new year, everyone, even Ed. And Ed, like I said on Twitter, the UPS not delivering children's Christmas gifts, I blame directly on you, Ed.
Mm. Oh, well, whatever. That's okay. And we're talking about this day and age. In this day and age, you can no longer wait till a week before Christmas to order something on the Internet. People need to get that
right.
shit out of their head. It ain't happening no more. Shit has changed. Shit has changed. Our warehouses aren't getting bigger. Our trucks aren't getting longer. They're not hiring more people to work. It's the same thing, having to deal with a whole lot more, and people just need to fucking order shit about a month before, 3 weeks before. You know, don't wait till the last. There's a cutoff. The post office tells you there's a cutoff date on when you're going to get shit, but yet some people decide that, oh, I'm just going to fucking next day air and it's going to get there. No, there's fucking, we're doing in record numbers by a lot every freaking night. It's not, you can't fucking wait till the last minute to order your shit anymore. I know Black Friday, Monday, whatever it is, what is it?
Cyber Monday.
Before Christmas, you know, you need to start doing stuff before because it's just too much volume. okay?
3 million parents had that uncomfortable conversation with their child about the reality of Santa due to Ed.
Yeah, well, they'll know better next year, you know. That's the only way it's going to get fixed. And it's only going to get worse as more people shop online every year. We would get these fucking massive, like, all of a sudden the bill would be belt-wide stacked, and it would be nothing but boxes with a goddamn Amazon tape down the middle. I mean, that shit about the drone, there's no way they're going to ever fucking do that, because they're going to need 10 billion fucking drones to deliver all these fucking packages. You know what I mean?
Alex, why'd you get it off track?
Hey, it's my show. I'll do whatever I want. So it's not UPS's fault. It's the dumb people's fault, and that's my stance. So that's all I'll say about it.
And also, if you're a parent out there, if you're a disgruntled parent and you had to have that uncomfortable conversation with your child about the reality of Santa, July 4th weekend, I can be your person, because I will choke out Ed in Las Vegas if that's what you want. So I'm saying, let your voices be heard. If you want Ed to be choked out, let the people on social media know you want to see Alex Goff choke out Ed in Las Vegas July 4th weekend. And it will happen.
Okay. Well, the last thing I want to say before I hang up on you, Alex, is that before you can use DJJ, the best way to stop that is to punch somebody right in the face. So
there you go.
Have a good next year, Alex, and I will be punching you in the face.
Happy New Year, Alex.
There he goes.
All right.
Okay. Let's go Pepper Show. Not that I'm complaining.
Hey, you can call in every week and take my spot.
Do I sound any better than didn't nobody say anything?
It changes. So I'm actually not using my landline. The fucking battery is about to die, so I actually use my cell phone. So we'll see if it was actually my cell phone or Block Talk Radio that was screwing everything up for those few weeks.
Yeah, well, my phone's new, so who knows? Yeah.
Okay. So we got a little bit of news here to finish off the show. We got about 45 minutes left, and going to kind of touch on some topics and discuss, if you will. First one, and Katrera, I'm just going to read down your list that you sent me.
I didn't put any details because I really just wanted to go through and find all these fucking stories. Plus, I figured I could probably remember pretty much all of them anyway and give the details. So go ahead.
There you go.
I didn't know you did.
Yeah, well, I read them. Come on. One of the big things that happened in 2013, we had Bruno Sammartino returning to the WWE after 25 years. He was inducted, of course, into the WWE Hall of Fame.
That might have been the most shocking.
And I got. Yeah, it was. That was probably the most hell froze over moment of the year. And luckily for me, I got to be at his very last sellout of Madison Square Garden and his record number of sellouts, and got to see there and be there, and fucking awesome.
You with us?
Oh, I'm just waiting for somebody to speak.
I was happy to see this happen. Bruno, tremendously respected by, you know, hundreds and thousands and millions of fans all over the world, and to see him in little bingo halls and doing autograph signings, you know, over in Pittsburgh is kind of a shame.
It gives a lot of credit to Triple H for this, too, being pretty persistent. Getting this was a pretty big thing to get done.
Absolutely. I mean, hate on Triple H all you want, but he's a diplomat, and he got Bruno in, and good on him. Good for him, man.
We're
I seen Vince McMahon and Bruno Hogan the Hall of Fame. I don't know. I like that. I want everybody to get along.
Absolutely. My hug Ed.
We need a bar Matt Clary for listening to the show. I don't appreciate his comments on Twitter. And you can no longer listen to the show, man.
Next up, unfortunately, one Paul Bearer passed away this year.
And a bunch of Paul Bearers put him in the ground.
Oh, Katrera.
Slaughter Prayer.
Well, that was bad. CM Punk was doing fucking rubbing ashes all over himself.
that was
true. Weird. I mean, I don't know. I don't get offended. I mean, that stuff don't offend me. It's just goofy. It's just strange.
By the way, there was a fellow that passed away just today in a tragic car accident. Have you guys heard of, oh my goodness, Ed Epstein, I think his name was?
Yeah, I saw something about that on the internet. He was like something to do with the magazines like back in the 80s or something. Scott Epstein,
thank you. There it is. Yeah, I saw a lot of indie guys tweeting, you know, they were very much upset that he was gone. I honestly have never heard of the man. I thought maybe you guys had heard.
I've heard his name before. I'm not sure how to describe Epstein. This might offend people, but he was kind of like... He was one of these guys that's like a mark for the wrestlers, like Dr. Lano, you know what I mean? That type of guy who they kind of cling to the wrestling business and cling to the wrestlers and get to know them. And apparently he was a really great guy. I mean, they won't have nothing but good things to say about him on the internet, but basically he's just a guy who was an outsider who kind of got himself, you know, in with the wrestlers, you know what I mean, in some ways.
Here's a little, Epstein was extremely close with superstar Billy Graham, and they had a friendship dated back to Graham's WWF run, and Epstein handled publicity for him. Epstein was heavily involved in the bodybuilding world as a promoter of events, as well as a writer about the genre. Meeting with Superstar Graham at Mr. Olympia contest brought both friendship and a chance for Epstein to cross into the pro wrestling world. During the 70s, he would write for a number of pro wrestling magazines, including Main Event and Ring Wrestling. Epstein used his publicity contacts to help a number of wrestlers get TV appearances, booking at the time, including Kim Patera, who he helped get booked at the ABC Sports Strongest Man in the World Competition. He would use these connections in the wrestling and bodybuilding world to bring Graham, Ivan Putski, Bruno, Tony Atlas, and others into the Bodybuilding Guild events where they would be honored as part of the Guild's Hall of Fame. As WWF expanded nationally, Epstein strayed from the business and pursued other exploits, including his full-time job working as a teacher and assistant principal in the New York City education system. Chance of his independent show led to Epstein running into Scott Putski, the son of Ivan. Epstein got involved in pro wrestling again. And that point on, he juggled a million hats around the New York City wrestling world, from vendor to photographer to publicity man. He was at every major convention with a guest. He was also involved in bringing talent to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Amsterdam, New York, and helped facilities get into contact with the promoters. At one point, he was also working on books about the careers of Brutus and Ivan Putski, although whether any major work was completed on them, nobody knows. Apparently he's in a car wreck, yeah. So.
Yeah, that sucks. Well, that's too bad. That's no good. But yeah, getting back to a news story. And it just seemed like Paul Bearer had been around forever, you know? And he was one of those guys where, hey, is Paul Bearer still alive? And you would, you know, have to think about it. I think so. And, yeah.
The first time I heard of him, probably the first time I saw him was in World Class, on it. Would that be
yeah.
Right?
I heard about him in Florida before he came
yeah,
to World
Class. Yeah, he's in Florida. That's where there was a full World Class. And,
yeah. I remember like the magazine talking about like an angle with him and Jimmy Garvin in Florida. And
yeah, I know he kind of like the PYTs, Coco Beware and Norrell Austin down there, and that's where he started with Rick Rude, and then they came over to World Class. And then Rude left, and he stayed around World Class for years. You know, he's big in that Eric Embry
deal that they had in the late 80s. And
I remember, like, back then, all the managers had a gimmick. Like, you know, Cornette had his tennis racket. Paul Lee had his phone. So, first, the Pringle decided to have this fucking thing that was basically like a stick with a flat end, so it was like he could like put the stick down on the ground and then put the seat part and then like kind of like not sit on it but like lean on it.
Mhm.
And that was a failure.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, and then he came into he was the second manager for The Undertaker. The Undertaker debuted at the Survivor Series in 1990 with Brother Love. Back when they called him Kane the Undertaker.
Right.
Those that don't know. And he came in and when Bruce Pritchard left in 91, he came in as the manager for The Undertaker, and they were together for at least 5 years at that point, you know, just as manager. He managed him for about 5 years. And talk about one of those guys that's like just perfect to play in a character. He's
yeah,
one
I was
of the
just
best.
About to say that. I mean, he was like the most goofiest character. I mean, he's like, they put so much white makeup on him, like it's almost like he's like The Walking Dead almost, and then all that eye makeup, and then, it was just for that time, like him and The Undertaker were like perfect characters for that time, and yet somehow they, as goofy and crazy as Undertaker and Paul Bearer are, somehow they stood the test of time, you know, Undertaker more than Paul Bearer, but, you know.
I think this is the third time he died. He died like twice before on TV.
At least.
I remember when they went to they did the cement thing where he got Undertaker put him in the cement? I remember because remember that video that broke of them doing a test run on it or something like that? Like it broke on the internet after the show and it was
oops.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't Kane tell him or something? He left him in a freezer. Or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, Edge put him in the freezer.
God, that's horrible.
The thing I remember, that I always remember when I think about Paul Bearer is when I was in my early 20s, I was a bartender. I was actually a bartender at SeaWorld here in town. And one of the fellow bartenders was this white guy, and then his girlfriend was one of the cocktail waitresses. They were, like, older. Kind of country talk, and they used to like to do a crank. And I'd actually get a little crank off of them here and there. But we'd kind of talk wrestling, and he used to live in Dallas, and he'd always talk about, I'd be at this bar, and this is where all the guys came, and he'd name all these different wrestlers. And he'd always go off, and his best customer for buying crank was Paul Bearer. He said, Paul Bearer would buy a shitload of crank, and this, I'm like, what? He's all, I go see, he's so big, he's all, well, I can't explain that, but he did a lot, and he'd buy for the other guys, and he just always go on about Paul Bearer being his best crank customer.
I didn't even know that. But.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ed. Way to honor the man that passed away.
Funny story. I'm sorry, but it's just, you know, the guy could have been full of shit, as far as I know. I'm just telling you what he told me.
Well, staying on the topic of death, Ric Flair, the son of Ric Flair, passed away this year due to a drug overdose. That's awful sad.
Yeah.
It's sad because, Ric did everything he did for him. You know, he got him booked in Japan, this and that, and they're going to do, like, some shows or whatever. And he's out partying with Flair, and everything's cool. And then, they partied all night, and you think that'd be enough, and, you know, Flair goes to bed, and he goes out and meets his friends and buys some heroin and ODs. It's like, you know what I mean?
That's why he's big on him staying in Japan, because it didn't happen over there. I mean, he wasn't into that kind of stuff over there in Japan, but, you know, get back over here in the States and run the wrong people, and, your friends are supposed to.
I mean, honestly, this is one of those where you saw it coming a million miles away, you know, because he got busted for heroin before, but WWE wouldn't touch him because, you know, of that arrest or whatever. You know what I mean? It's
like far heroin stuff. That's just,
Yeah, it was. It's just he was one of those guys that was just destined not to make it past, you know, the age that he did, sadly.
Now, I heard about, you know, Rick missing a show to go to his wrestling tournament when he's really young and things like that, but he never really did anything in the States. I mean, his name was not
I think the biggest thing he did in the States was they did, like, this big match with, like, him and David. I think maybe against the Nasty Boys or something with Hogan as a referee. And, like, some kind
on an indie show.
Yeah, on an indie show. Like, he was the first match or something. And most of the, and then he was over in Japan, in, like, pretty much the whole time.
He wasn't around for that long. I mean,
he was real young, wasn't he?
I think he sent him over to Japan to, I think, mature him a little bit more.
Right, to also get away from all this, because I'm sure Rick knew what was going on.
No, he was probably up all night and up a little longer with him. You know what I mean? Just saying.
Speaking of the second generation, this was just a little thing in the Observer a couple weeks ago about Chris Benoit's son, David, getting into wrestling.
That's going to
be a weird one.
Oh, yeah. Lord. Who's going to book that guy?
I know. I don't know how you touch that one.
Oof. Good night.
I'm WWE. I guess you just have to lose the application every time it comes across your desk. I don't know.
Can you imagine some indie promoter? He's gonna do really good in like the CZW and the King of the Deathmatch tournaments and things like that.
I mean, that's not his fault. It's not his fault. Dad's a nut and went out. You know, it's just,
yeah, but it's hard to shake a stigma like that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how you promote that one. I don't think I wouldn't want any part of it. That's just...
No, that's something ICP would pick up on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's something for, like, the, whatever they call it, the circus of the jigaboos or the juggalos or whatever.
The gathering of the juggalos, you mean?
Well, I just made a racist comment. I apologize. I couldn't remember what the word was.
Oh, good prayer.
God, if we get thrown off the air, we'd be thrown off the air.
Yeah, but, that's right. If we were on the air.
Sorry, I couldn't remember it. It's the ICP. I wouldn't be surprised if it was called the Jigaboos. I don't know. They have their own version called Juggalo Championship Wrestling. I mean, seriously now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, this is all true.
I think Benoit was looking to get in with, like, Cody Hall. Scott Hall's son.
Oh, Lord. Cody's a big son of a gun, I'll tell you what, man. I've seen pictures of him and his dad on Twitter, you know, and those guys are about the same height.
I was watching some video on YouTube, and it was Scott Hall. He's sitting there playing the WWE 2014, and he's shooting Dallas Page playing with him. Dallas got pissed off because he wasn't in the game. Dude, I'm not in the fucking game. Oh, God.
Oh, Lord.
YouTube real quick. Everybody should check out. I watched they had like a 12-minute preview for the Breaking Kayfabe with Jim Cornette. I don't know if anybody saw that today.
Okay.
But pretty awesome. It's like the whole thing is about like his whole stint in ROH. So.
Right.
12 minutes I watched was pretty good.
I've seen shoot interviews with him in the past, you know, early 90s, and man, that guy's entertaining. Good night, he's entertaining.
Well, at this point, now he gets kind of rambling.
Yeah.
And if you really want to hear him talk about a wide variety of just different old school stuff and like really good stuff, get the... Which I've mentioned them many times before, the Wrestling Gold DVDs, and listen to the commentary with Cornette and Dave Meltzer.
Oh, I just found that on YouTube the other day, as a matter of fact. I need to put it up on my channel. I found the two-hour, it's
the audio is like really at a sync on it, but it doesn't really hurt because I'm just listening like Dave and Cornette. So
yeah, so the matches are just, they're just kind of like on. You just listen to all this stuff, and it's like going to like wrestling school.
Yeah. The stuff I saw in the early 90s that I want to say RF did with him rival the comments Couture just made, you know, talking about taxi cab drivers and what he was going to do with his tennis racket and possibly calling them camel jockeys and towel heads and things like that. So
LFers could all be thrown out of helicopters in front of their families.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I got the best one I got was like, they had the, it was like a 4-hour shoot interview from like 2000 with all their video. I got I still listen to every, check out every now and then. And they used to have a few of those from the Smoky Mountain Wrestling Fan Weeks. And they would do like the Q&As, and they were awesome. They just go off on people and, you know, tell stories for like 2-3 hours. It was fantastic.
And our next story, and this might take up a pretty good chunk of time, I'm just gonna announce it like this. Do we have a TNA in 2014?
Yes, we have a TNA. Despite all the problems, as long as they got Spike TV, they're going to be on there. So.
Okay. And if they lose Spike, if they lose their television, they're done for.
No, they'll just go back to weekly papers and be all right and actually make money again.
Oof.
Jeff Jarrett just quit. I was shocked at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's
going
to go to the time.
It's been a steady decline all year. You know, the
television
is...
Station hurt them because, you know, they lost a lot of money there. And they headed to the, headed to the crawl of shame back to Orlando. And they cut out the pay-per-views, which I guess was for the best.
I think so.
Yeah.
Hey, Craig, you'll find this interesting because apparently he's just throwing you off in every conceivable way possible. But, you know, Matt Farmer just retweeted a tweet of mine the other day. He's conversating with Conan on Twitter almost as we speak. And I guess he's somehow, some way offended Matt Farmer.
Well, it won't be the first time. I'll find
people
him.
You know, Hogan left this year. You know, they were behind on paying a bunch of people, and Hogan that he left this year. They couldn't afford to pay him anymore. You know what he was making. AJ Styles, well, you know, like who were aside from Jeff Jarrett, the first person you think of is TNA is AJ Styles, right?
Yeah, agreed. And who knows what's going on with that. I mean, even Dave and Bryant are kind of scratching their heads. He's taken some bookings with CZW and has done a deal with RF where he's going to sit down and do a shoot with him. And it's interesting. Interesting to say the least.
Isn't he supposed to be on Observer Radio here coming up soon? Or have they already done that? I swear I heard something about that.
Yeah, it's supposed to be on Tuesday, I think.
Okay.
Hmm.
No, I heard about it somewhere.
I wonder if they can get the truth out of him. I can't see them not signing him. It just blows my mind if they let him go.
I think he'll be back next year sometime. I mean, I could think if I wanted to keep AJ Styles, I could think of like at least 5 people I could let go to make up for it. You know, to free up that money.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, geez.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's very interesting. They're going, if this is just a huge work, they're going to a lot of trouble to really keep everything under the
he's already lost the unification match that ain't there yet. You know, they already done that. They which I don't know. Maybe they should have. I would have figured maybe they would have wanted to wait for maybe. For a pay-per-view, but I don't even know when the hell the next pay-per-view is. I mean, it's probably be like April or something like that. So
sure. Okay.
Which I don't think will matter that much anyway because they do shit on pay-per-view. So.
Mm. Moving right along, we had a couple of returns to the WWE. Actually, we had a turn and a walkout. RVD returned to the WWE in 2013 and is no longer with the company. So, make it that
way. I think he's doing that every 90-day thing like Jericho would do every now and then. You know, he's like in and out every 90 days, you know, he's come in.
The thing that you know, probably ruined this, and I'm sure people would disagree with me, is you can't forget that a few years ago he almost killed Triple H in a match.
I don't think anybody cares about that anymore.
I think Triple H cares about that.
I don't think he does. Or if he wouldn't have brought him back in the first place.
This is true.
Let's punish a guy by giving him a job.
Well,
that was a pretty thing, because they had that new stage in that Elimination Chamber, and he was trying to do one like what a 5-star frog splash, and I guess it had never been used before, you know, like in that structure. So it just imagine that Triple H don't care no more. Jeez.
Probably not. The other return, and I'm very much excited for this. We just saw it this last Monday. Batista is set to return very soon, and I'm excited for Batista to come back.
I'm kind of surprised.
Oh, me too.
Because I thought, you know, he's got this big movie coming out next year. So this will be a big, really big deal. And
When he comes back, he should be green.
Like the Hulk.
Green with purple.
Oh, man. I hope they get rid of that stupid belly button tattoo. I hope he got that laser off.
That's why I said it should make him green. He should be, instead of Drax the Destroyer, Batista the Destroyer.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know about that one. But, I'm excited for Batista. My son saw him on the screen. You know, my son's 7. Never saw Batista, ever, you know.
Oh, really?
He doesn't remember Batista.
That's because when he left, he was like at the best of his career. Because he had that character. He was just a dick, and he was so awesome.
Oh, he was tremendous. Those gaudy, douchey outfits that he used to wear. Oh, my goodness. Him in the wheelchair there at the end. Oh, my goodness. That was tremendous. So, I see him. Who knows? I think he might win the Rumble.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Makes much sense than anything else. Makes much sense than anything else. So we had a reality show debut this year. It was called Total Divas. Premiered on the E Network. And as Katrina wrote here, geeks worldwide get moist and proclaim best thing ever.
Best thing ever.
In quote. I'll put that in quotes.
So you actually got something right for a change.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll put it in quotes so you know I'm being sarcastic.
Yes, I got the sarcasm. It was dripping with sarcasm.
It was dripping like all the geeks?
But make of what you will of this show and say what you will about it. This thing... has been
the
tremendous.
The greatest show ever. It made me laugh. It made me cry.
Mostly
angry.
Cry.
It made me happy. It made me hard. It was awesome.
Oh, it made a lot of people angry.
Just threw up in my mouth. Yeah. It's polarizing. You either hate it or you love it. And
I didn't watch the second season or whatever the first set. The second half of the first thing.
I think I've maybe seen like 5 episodes total, but this thing, you know, I've heard one of the local DJs in the area here, he's a huge wrestling fan, and he talks, he has a podcast that he does every Tuesdays, aside from the morning show that he's on. He talks about how his wife wanted to go to Raw with him because she loves the show so much. And she didn't care about watching wrestling. She wanted to go see, you know, the Bellas
and JoJo and Eva Marie and so forth and so on.
Speaking of the Total Divas, did you see that awesome move that they invented on what the fuck show was, but when they were doing the chains, basically?
Oh,
like first Natty did like a spinning clothesline, and then she grabbed Brie or Nikki and spun her, and she did the clothesline, and then the other Bella grabbed the hold, and then there was three, and then there was a fourth, and then the fifth, and then there was like all six of them just clotheslining the hell out of the other Divas. It was like the greatest spot I ever seen in my life.
Yeah, they interlinked arms and ran circles in the ring, clotheslining the heels out of the ring.
When was this?
It was on Monday, I think.
Oh, I didn't watch Monday.
How do you not watch the World's Strongest Santa against the bad Santa, dude, for the Christmas on the line of all things, Couture? Where's your Christmas spirit?
I figured that Christmas wasn't going to be stalled because Mark Henry lost to Damian Sandow on a professional wrestling broadcast.
My son was almost concerned that possibly Christmas would be canceled if Mark Henry did not beat Damian Sandow. So thank God he won.
I only watch what's live. Everything else, I just read the results and that if I need to watch it or not. So,
One of the best things ever, though, was like the week before, whatever, when they were doing like the intro promos for the match the week before, and Mark Henry just with that big smile. The World's Strongest Santa. That just made me fucking laugh, dude, so much.
I greatly enjoyed Rob.
How could you not love Mark Henry? You
know. Yeah, he's a character. He's
I could accept the Black Santa Claus if it was Mark Henry.
I don't know what to say about that. Yeah, it was a good episode of Raw. I enjoyed it. An Irish whip into a Christmas tree was way up there on things I saw this week.
Well, did you read the spoilers? Then you could tell your son a week early Christmas was saved.
Oh, why don't you just tell him that Santa Claus is fake too?
No.
Yeah, see.
I'll do that.
No, you better not. I'll beat you to a pulp. Actually, by then you'll probably figure it out. Next story. We had probably the biggest show of the year. WrestleMania 29 drew 80,676 people. Don't know if that's legit or not. To MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey.
And it was fucking cold that day. And it looked like it was going to rain on us, but thankfully it was just a real quick drizzle. And you know what? We were like, we had good seats, but we were like lower than halfway up, and it was cold. Mm-hmm. And I ended up arranging for like I kind of like helped out these two girls from Diva Dirt get tickets. Like this one guy from the website from Australia was kind of going, and he had an extra ticket, so I kind of like arranged for him to sit with us, and then the girls got the tickets so they could actually go because they were only going to the Hall of Fame. But their tickets were way up there, and they told me that it was like fucking the North Pole. It was so fucking cold up top at that stadium. So,
sure.
You know, I think, you know, people said it was quiet at times. It was quiet at times because people had their fucking arms in their fucking pockets and were sitting their ass off.
Right. And they're going to play the Super Bowl there this year. My goodness, what are they thinking?
Yeah, and the Super Bowl's what, in February? It's going to be fucking, that's, it's crazy because usually they're somewhere in the south or in a dome. It's like, this is going to be like an actual, like when the Cowboys had that one Super Bowl. I mean, maybe the Cowboys Green Bay, the Ice Bowl? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good possibility it's going to snow on Super Bowl Sunday. Good possibility.
I hope it does. That'd be awesome.
So in the main event of WrestleMania 29, we had John Cena getting his win back from The Rock. He beat The Rock in 23 minutes and 59 seconds to win the WWE World title. Arguably the best match on the show, The Undertaker pinned CM Punk in 22 minutes and some change. And semi-main Triple H pinned Brock in 23:58. A lot of time given to the last few matches on the show.
all in all, kind of a forgettable WrestleMania, to be honest with you.
It was lackluster, I thought. Aside from, like, aside from Taker and Punk, nothing really stood out to me.
Well, it was a different story if you were there, because it was pretty memorable to me. That whole trip was just awesome. I mean, that was just one of the best WrestleMania trips ever. You know, you missed out, Craig, on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because ROH was badass. The WrestleCon with Shimmer and Shikara are badass. Just getting on different trains and subways with like guys like Doc G and Dazza and a bunch of other people. I mean, it was cool. The bus that me and Doc G rented, you know, and took everybody to WrestleMania and back. That was awesome. One guy was kind of being an asshole, and I had to put him in his face and shut him up. But yeah, this is one guy kind of being a dick for a minute. But
was the WrestleMania trip the one where the handshake snub happened, or was that the convention?
Yes, that's the snub. The Todd Martin snubbing Doc G outside Madison Square Garden.
Oh,
I was right there live. I saw it. It was like one of the greatest things ever. I was just like, what the fuck? Todd Martin, oh man, I remember you. I'm not shaking your hand and just storming off. And he didn't hear I don't even know if he saw me or he was just so whatever. But he just like stormed off. And me and Doc G were like, what the fuck? But that was awesome. And then I had messaged Todd and said, hey, you know, this is the deal with the bus. You know, you're welcome to come, whatever. He said he'd let me know. And then when we get to, because basically a bunch of us left from the hotel, like Vinny and Whitney and a bunch of other people. So we left from the hotel, but we went straight to WrestleCon to pick up the people who were at WrestleCon for the Dragon's Gate show, like Brian and Alan Perel and Tinku Kroll. So we start to pull up, and there's this Brian and this whole big crowd. And as soon as they see the bus coming, they start coming down. So, you know, we were charging, you know what I mean? So the only smart thing to do was I'd let Doc G be in charge of that shit because, you know, I put a fucked up somewhere. So Doc G goes outside, and the people are coming on. They're giving Doc G the money. And he's on the side of the bus with the door. On the other side, I see Todd Martin and their friend walking all cool, just, you know, enjoying themselves. And then they walk in front of the bus. And as soon as they get to the side of the bus, he just sees Doc G handing the money. And Todd Martin is saying that he just turns around and starts walking. And the friend's like, what the fuck? So he kind of goes with him. So he just, like, walked away. It was funny. So we would have let him on the bus, I mean. But, you know. It was like a soap opera at WrestleMania. It was awesome.
So that's really all the news. I thought we would finish off the last few minutes that we had by picking a wrestler that we think is going to have the standout 2014.
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns, there you go. And why is that, Katrina?
I don't know, because Dave Meltzer told me so.
Ed?
Well, this will make Robert happy because he's talking about it. I think Leva Bates is going to have a breakout year because Leva Bates is awesome. Leva Bates kicks ass. Leva Bates is beautiful. Leva Bates is just the best women's wrestler out there right now, and I just love Leva Bates, and she will have the best year next year.
That's six times you said her name, so you can stop now.
There you go.
Oh, wait, I got to say it one more time. Leva Bates is the best.
And I have to echo what Katrina said. Roman Reigns I'm going to echo what Katrina said. Roman Reigns is the total package. He's big. He's a good-looking young man. My wife even mentioned his beautiful blue eyes, and he's going to have a standout year, I think. And I also, just under that, I think Big E Langston's going to be something to watch out for.
Yeah, I like him.
I'm hoping that we'll see the Wolves brought up to the main roster, but the American Bulldogs, I think they were called the American Pit Bulls. What are they going by now?
American Pit Bulls.
Yeah, so I'm hoping they can make a dent in the roster. It's really cool to see, you know, the main events. You got a big six-man tag, and you're looking in the ring, and, you know, four or five of the guys have actually come through the indie ranks and passed through Ring of Honor or Dragon Gate at some point. And I think it's about time that the smaller dudes get some recognition, and, you know, they work even harder than the heavyweight.
This is with the tag division they got now. This is the best it's been in years.
Oh, yeah. It was non-existent for a long time, and as we've heard on Wrestling Observer Radio, you know, Triple H is very much behind the tag team division. So
it's really had the best matches on all the shows lately the last few months.
Yeah. If it hadn't been for the six-mans and Cody and Dustin and the Shield you know, those guys, you know, some of those Raws have been pretty lackluster. And you get a good six-man on there, and it turns a whole show around. So, who knows? Maybe they'll even bring in the old-school six-man world title. Who knows? Anybody you want to not see next year?
That what?
Anybody
that
I don't want to see?
Yeah. Who would you like to see drop off the face of the earth next year?
I don't know. Nobody can think of really like them, but
I got one. The unentertaining guy who probably was the one who bumped me from the Christmas show, and that is Antonio the Promised Thomas. I could do with never seeing him again. That bastard.
He's betrayed us. He's gone over to the dark side and is doing Colt Cabana's podcast this week. So.
He's all, but I saw Alex begging him on Twitter to be on his show. I don't think he'll lower himself to do that one, though.
But I would really like to see The Miz move on from in-ring action and just do something, not even behind the scenes, but be a color guy or an announcer if they could bring him.
He's a heel or a babyface. Fuck's sake.
Yeah, I know. He's flopped sides about four times.
The hardest turn I've ever seen in my life. I don't know what they're doing.
It's a slow burn, Katrick. You got to wait for it.
Also, real quick, who agrees with me that Missy Hyatt was fucking five stars, totally awesome on the Christmas show until she started to try and bury me, and then she just fell off the cliff and it was just sad after that.
Well, I thought she ramped it up a notch when that happened, but that's just me.
Oh, she was trying way too hard.
The Christmas show.
Let me turn off the show real quick. Excuse me, I'm trying to be courtesy to our good friend Stevie Dick. Everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows like The Angry Marks Show and Love Up and Shut Up and just a whole lot more. So check out AngryMarks.com. You can also download and stream our show at BlogTalkRadio.com/Cotrere. And older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or Ed in San Antonio. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ed in San Antonio.
And you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Proper Jam, P-R-O-P-E-R-J-A-M. And had some nice back and forth with Missy Hyatt this week. And anyway, just a good time on Twitter, so check that out there. And Katrina, the floor is yours.
Catch me at Katrina35 on Twitter. Also go to youtube.com/Katrina. And I've got a bunch of great stuff, old wrestling videos and stuff up there. I kind of put that wrestling gold up there that I found the other day. So if anybody wants to go and check that out, they can do that.
Very cool. Yeah, that wrestling gold, that is, in fact, gold. Good stuff.
It really is. What? It's fantastic. I mean, the matches aren't bad because you get to see, like, a young Rick Rude, you know, Manny Fernandez when he was in his prime. You get to see Gino and Telly together. You get to see Gino and Telly against each other. You get to see Bruiser Brody. You get to see some of the freaking Crusher and the Bruiser. You get to see just the Sheik. You know, way back in the day, I mean...
John Michaels in his rookie year.
Magnum T.A. in his, like, rookie year also. Both of them from, like, Southwest. In fact, it's Magnum against Nick Buckley, so it's an awesome little match. And there's just a lot of good shit. And then, like I say, the commentary is even better than the Mets. So, yeah, I highly recommend everyone check out the Wrestling Gold. It's just the greatest DVD set ever.
I still had, like, they came out with several DVDs at the time, because I remember, I think they came out with the Night of the Legends that had Cornette and Meltzer doing the alternate commentary. I think that
that's
also
great.
They did
the Before They Were Stars also that had commentary.
Yes, with Batista and some of the other guys that came up through OVW.
No, Batista's not on that one, but like guys like Taz and Hugh Moore and Miguel Perez are on that one.
Bob Holly.
Bob Holly, yeah.
Okay. There you
Kane.
Go.
Yeah, there's no Batista on that one. That's before Batista.
My bad. But yeah, check those out, Wrestling Gold.
Well, it wouldn't be a show if, like, you didn't make some kind of major mistake, you know, every week. So it's just, you know, that's just a perfect way to end the show. Way to go, Craig. That's just what we needed. Awesome.
I did get a fistful of DVDs from Brian that he had done commentary on, and there was a Before There Were Stars with Batista, mostly OVW guys from back in the day. So whatever.
It had Pokemon and OVW on there, didn't it?
One more time, I'm sorry.
I said they had Smoky Mountain guys and OVW guys. I think it was on the same disc.
I thought it was
somewhere. It's got OVW footage and it's got Smoky Mountain footage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway. This new iPhone, what's this FaceTime thing? Is that where you can call somebody and look at them?
Pretty much.
I don't like that.
On South Park, on their Halloween episode, Stan got kind of grounded and he couldn't go out with the guys, and they were all doing the Avengers, and Stan was Captain America. So basically, they just got like a wagon and they put Kyle's little iPad or whatever while he was FaceTime talking with Stan. So they just wheeled Stan FaceTime and they trick or treated that way. It was awesome.
Okay.
But,
it's a lot more fun playing these games on the Kindle than on your phone. I just realized. It's bigger.
Okay.
You just realized that? That's, like, say you're pretty slow at times. But anyway.
Yes.
I guess we'll wrap up our last show of the year. And we'll come back with our first show of the new year next week. And, you know, we'll have something figured out by then, so everyone come back next year. Thank you for listening this year, and have a great night, I guess. Well, any last thoughts, Craig?
Just Happy New Year to everybody. Have a good one. Be safe.
Hey, Jared? Oh, you must have hung up already. Oh, well. Here we go.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man!
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit! Let's go hook him up!
I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.